Okay, I'm John Baich. I'm currently the chief of the Southgate Volunteer Fire Department. In May of 1977, I was a 21-year-old volunteer lieutenant on the department, and I responded on the first engine that responded to the Beverly Hills fire.
What were you doing that night when you heard the alarm or the radio call or whatever?
Well, at that time, a lot of us younger guys had a tradition that we would go to the firehouse and we'd watch the show Emergency, which was on from 8 until 9. That show got over at 9. I was leaving the firehouse, got in my car, and was driving away when the fire siren went off and alerted me that there was a fire. And so I turned around, went back to the station, and got on the engine and went to the fire.
When the fire call came in, did you have any idea, other than the location, about the scope or the kind of fire that you were going to be responding to?
When the fire call came in, I wasn't sure what we were going to. In those days, we didn't have pagers or anything to alert us. All we had was a roof siren. When I got to the firehouse, I was told that there was a fire at Beverly Hills, and that was when they were building 471, and we had had several calls for brush fires up there, and my first assumption was that we were going to another brush fire. When we rounded the bend on US 27 and got within sight of the building, I could see black smoke coming along the roof line of the building. That was when I first realized that it was actually a structure fire and that it was serious.
You would have been on a pumper truck, and with how many other volunteers?
I was on a pumper truck. There were five of us, or six of us total. Myself, there was an engineer, another officer, and then three firefighters on the back of the engine. In those days, you were still allowed to ride on the back of the fire engine.
And did the pumper truck get all the way up the long driveway up to the top and near the fire?
Yes. We had a pre-plan in case of a fire. We had actually practiced the pre-plan just about 2 weeks before the fire. And the first in engine was to catch a hydrant, which was at the top of the hill. In those days, we didn't have 5-inch supply lines. We used 3-inch or 2.5-inch. And our procedure was that if it was a small fire, we laid one supply line. And if it was a large fire, we laid two. When I saw that this was going to be a large fire, as we were going up the hill, I was telling the firefighters on the back to lay duals, which meant they were going to lay two hose lines. And so that's what we did.
So you get up to the top, the building is fairly well engulfed at that point?
No, you couldn't see fire, you could just see smoke. When we got to the top of the hill, most of the ride up, I had my back to the building because I was shouting instructions to the firefighters on the back. When we got to the top of the hill, we pulled up under the parapet right by the front entrance. I turned around and I saw a decent number of people in the parking lot. And my first thought was, oh good, everybody's out of the building. Obviously that wasn't the case. But that was what my first thought was. When I got off the truck, the fire chief had responded in a rescue truck, and he was already on the scene. And I went to him, and he said that they had received reports that there were people either trapped on the second floor or trapped on the roof. My first assignment was to go and assist the firefighters who were going up onto the roof to try and get those people.
And as it turned out, there was nobody on the roof.
There was no one on the roof. Yeah, we got up there. There was a door. We broke the door open. It was obvious when the black smoke that came out of the door when we opened it, it was obvious that if there had been anyone inside, they would have not been able to live through that. And there was no one on the roof. So we went back down and then went about rescuing people that were in the building itself.
Since we're talking about the roof, Wayne Dammert, who was the banquet captain there, said that when he was leading people out of the second floor area, that that door was locked. And that was one of his first thoughts. Let's get out this door, get out to the edge of the roof, and maybe somebody can come and get us. But that door was locked, and they didn't have access to it. When your men broke it down, do you have an idea whether it was locked or not?
Well, I know that the door was locked from the outside. I don't know about the inside, because one of our firefighters, I believe, used an axe to break the door to get it open.
So then, after what you did on the roof, what was the next thing?
I went around to the front of the building, which is actually the side, the US 27 side, and I worked my way down to what was the stage exit. And there were firefighters there, and they were pulling people out of the building at that point. There were probably, I would say, 4 to 6 firefighters. It was very congested there, and I thought, well, they don't really need me here. So I went on to the back of the building, which would have been the chapel exit. When I got there, I went inside the chapel exit, went as far as I could go without a mask, and found a couple other Southgate firefighters and some Fort Thomas firefighters. There were firefighters in air mask, or SCBA, who were further into the building, and they were calling to victims of the fire to move their arms, and you could hear people calling for help, and the firefighters were trying to locate them. And they were telling them to move their arms or move their, you know, somehow let them know where they were. When I got close enough to see, I could actually see that there were bodies piled up on top of one another. And the way it appeared, it looked like the people on the bottom and the people on the top were unconscious or dead, and some of the people in the middle were still alive, and those were the ones that were calling for help. The firefighters were trying to find them. The problem was getting them dislodged from the pile of bodies that were there. They were saying that they needed lights, so I left and went to the front of the building to the engine to see if we could get a generator and some lights to bring back there. So I left and ran to the front of the building, told the engineer that was on duty that they needed a generator and lights in the rear, and that if he could find some people to have them bring those back. I went back to the rear with an SCBA and put the SCBA on and went into the building. And when I got in there, at that point, there were no more, you could no longer hear people calling for help. At that point, they had either been pulled out or they had gone unconscious.
This area that you're describing where you, where the bodies were piled up, was that in the garden room or was that in the exit coming out of the cabaret room or was that in the cabaret room?
I believe it was the exit out of the cabaret room. That it was a waiter's exit. They had two doors. One door swung in, one door swung out. And it was right around that point where these people were piled up at. I'm not sure if it was actually inside there or just outside there, but it was in that area.
So the first time you were in there before you went to get the generators, were the firefighters using flashlights? I imagine that there's thick smoke and there's no lights.
Yeah, the smoke was fairly thick. You couldn't really see. They were using flashlights at the time to try and find people.
Many years ago for the Cincinnati Inquirer, I actually interviewed a man who was a Channel 12 photographer who at one point, the firefighters asked for the spotlight off his camera, and he just gave it to them so they could, because at that critical point, they needed light.
Yes, I was actually in the building, and there was a cameraman who actually worked his way in there and was filming, and his light was giving them light to see what was going on. And I think at some point, he had gotten enough smoke that he needed to get out. I don't recall that he turned his camera over to the firefighters, but I know that it stayed in there until the battery ran out on it, because that light was a great help to us.
The people that were stacked, you said the people on the bottom, the top, were probably either dead or had overcome, were unconscious, but there were people in the middle. Can you quantify it? Is it 10 people or 20 people or 50?
It was hard to say how many people there were. If I had to guess, I would say there were probably 100 to 150 people who were all piled up at that door when I first went in. When I went in the second time, they had removed several of those, but there were still a lot of people in there. You really couldn't tell because you couldn't see past the pile of bodies. There were reports that they were stacked like wood, and it was almost like that. There were people that, you know, literally were piled one on top of the other.
You don't have to answer this question if you don't want to, but you're 21 years old. You've been in fire service at that point, what, 4, 5, 6 years?
4 years.
4 years. And to see these images, I mean, has that had a lasting impact on you?
It's had a lasting impact on me. I think it made me want to be a more dedicated and a better firefighter. I didn't have nightmares. I know a lot of people did. A lot of firefighters did. Some of my friends left the fire service because of it. Some were somewhat haunted by it. Most of us, I think, just reacted in a way that we wished we could have done more, but we realized that we did everything that we possibly could. So I don't think there was guilt or anguish over what we did. We just, you know, we were faced with a nearly impossible situation.
Talk a little bit about the practice run that you had done a couple of weeks before. Were you on that?
Yes, I was. That was done mainly to get adequate water to the top of the hill. I think none of us actually envisioned or imagined that if there were a fire at the Beverly Hills, it would take place while people were in the building. And I think we figured, or we assumed, that if it took place while people were in the building, that it would be found quickly and extinguished quickly. So our plan was more, if there's a fire in the middle of the night, how are we going to get enough water up there to put the fire out? So our main goal was water supply. And water supply was very difficult because there were two hydrants at the top of the hill. Neither one of them flowed a lot of water. There was a hydrant on US 27, but that was at the bottom of a very steep, grassy hill. And our pre-plan was that our first engine would catch the hydrant at the top of the hill, which is what we did. Newport's first engine would respond and go to the top of the hill, and then two of their firefighters were going to hand drag 3-inch supply lines over the hill all the way to the hydrant and hook up to the hydrant. And then they were going to tandem pump up the hill to an aerial, which would have been Fort Thomas's aerial. All of those things took place the night of the fire, but we hadn't planned on the idea of what would we do if there was actually a major fire and there were people inside, because at that time, nobody really considered that as a possibility.
And because of how it happened, was that meant that personnel that you would have thought would have been fighting the fire were actually rescuing?
Yes. Chief Riesenberg, the fire chief, told the firefighters to basically abandon their hose lines and stop trying to put the fire out and focus all of our efforts on rescuing as many people out of the building as we could. So I think that other than the aerial ladder, which was throwing water on the building through the roof, other than those lines, I don't think there were any firefighting lines used for a significant amount of time, because everyone was concentrating on trying to get people out of the building.
Do you have any idea how many fire companies responded that night?
I don't have that off the top of my head. I know there were 550 firefighters that responded. I believe there were about 37 or 35 departments. There were departments from all of Campbell County, most of northern Kentucky. Several fire departments from Cincinnati came. Obviously, all of the news stations, all of the television stations interrupted their broadcasting to talk about the fire. And one of the problems we had was oxygen for the victims. We just didn't have enough oxygen up there. And at one point, I think a call went over the airways that they needed oxygen at the fire, and several departments from the Cincinnati area responded. Cincinnati Fire Department sent either one or two paramedic units over, and the paramedics set up triage in the chapel area and were doing triage on patients. There were departments that came from as far south as LaGrange, Kentucky. They came up the next morning and helped with removal of the bodies and stuff. So it was a very large response.
Can you describe a bit of the scene once you ended the rooftop effort and came around the building? I mean, the picture that sticks in my mind was the number of bodies laid out kind of on the hillside with the fire burning in the background. Was the event to that point?
The hillside bodies were the ones that came out of the stage exit. And I was only at that exit for a few minutes or a few seconds probably. At that point, they were, I think, just starting to bring bodies out of there. I went to the cabaret room exit, and the cabaret exit was actually very organized for such a chaotic situation. What we did was they had firefighters, patrons, employees of the club, and it was mostly patrons and employees who lined up outside the chapel doors. And as the firefighters that were inside the fire would bring a person out, they would bring them out, lay them down, and four people would grab an arm, and you know, one person on an arm, one person on a leg, and the four people would pick that person up, carry them outside. There were some doctors that were at the club that night, and they were triaging the patients when they brought them out. And if they were alive, you know, then they were doing everything they could to keep them alive. And if they were deceased, they were placing them in the grass. I think early on in the fire, there was a lot of confusion trying to keep track of who was alive and who was dead. And eventually, because we didn't have sheets or anything, they just started pulling their shirts or their dressers or something over their head. And if you saw that, you knew that that person was deceased. Eventually, as more and more people were brought out of the building, we started moving the deceased people to a separate area because it started getting crowded and there wasn't a whole lot of room in that area. So we moved the deceased people off to one side, and they continued to work on the people who were alive. And then, you know, late in the evening, the National Guard brought some trucks up and they actually removed the bodies to the Fort Thomas Armory, which is where the morgue was set up.
Did you have much of a working knowledge of how the club was laid out with and had been expanded over time with the different rooms at all from your practice runs or going there to eat or see a show?
I had never been there as a patron, but I was only 21, so.
That's why I ask.
But I had been there on EMS runs, and we had toured the building at least once on fire drills. I had been in there enough to know that it was extremely confusing, and you know, if you made a run there and someone was hurt, one of the employees of the club had to lead you in and lead you back out because it was confusing to to figure out, you know, your way through the building. Now, the night of the fire, we didn't go through the building. We went from the outside in, so...
What kind of EMS runs? Just people who had been ill or taken ill during?
Yeah, people who had too much to drink or were having difficulty breathing, heart attacks, those type of things. I had probably been there maybe 4 to 6 times, I think, on EMS runs over the course of a couple years.
Looking at your job or the job of the fire department of code enforcement, fire code, how did things change because of that fire?
Well, prior to the fire, our responsibility as far as code enforcement in a building like that was that we checked to make sure that extinguishers were there and were working. We checked to see that exit lights worked and that exits were marked. And that was pretty much all that we did. Most of the inspection as far as meeting fire codes was done by the state fire marshal's office. We were, a small volunteer department, and I don't know that any of us had the expertise to know the different codes and stuff. After the fire, that all changed because all fire departments came to the realization that it was not only up to the state, but it was also up to them to see to it that these things were enforced, because there were some blatant code violations at the Beverly Hills that, for whatever reason, were not pointed out or were not corrected. And so after the fire, I think all fire departments became aware of that. I think all fire departments became aware of overcrowding after the fire. And I think a lot of people became aware of that because of the fire. I think people, when they went into a restaurant or a show like that, they weren't so much concerned with, where's my seat going to be? They were more concerned with, okay, this is my seat, where's an exit? And are we overcrowded? I think prior to the fire, people would have said, I don't care how crowded you are, fit me in there. And after the fire, I think they realized that isn't necessarily a good thing.
Do you, when you go to a place, do you look for the exits?
Like I do.
I do.
Yeah, I do. I look at the exits. If it's really crowded, you know, I think about, okay, what am I going to do if I have to get out of here, or do I even want to stay? And unfortunately, you still go to places where it's overcrowded.
You had mentioned that there were blatant violations there. I know that. So I'm going to ask, was that inadequate exits, exits blocked, overcrowding?
I think the overcrowding was probably one of the bigger issues. I know that a stairwell to the second floor was not enclosed, and it was supposed to be. And I mean, that was in clear view. I think we all assumed that if it's there, it must be okay. But as it turns out, it probably wasn't. A lot of the materials that were used didn't meet the requirements, you know.
For fire retardation,
yes. So there were things like that we just weren't aware of.
Do you know, and if you don't, it's okay to say you don't, were sprinklers not required back then?
Sprinklers were not required, no. That was an existing building. I'm not sure when the sprinkler requirements started, but it was sometime after then.
I know you're a volunteer fire department. Do you inspect buildings, and do you expect for other things than what you would have done prior to 1977?
We do. Yeah, we inspect now, and we're a lot more aware of the Kentucky revised fire codes and what all they have. We still don't have necessarily all of the power in some businesses or some type of establishments to enforce the laws, but we at least are able to see what's wrong and point that out to the state fire marshal and have them come and inspect if need be.
On the hilltop where the club was, what is there now, or is it just overgrown and abandoned?
It's just overgrown. There have been a few attempts over the years to try and put something there. There was one development that was going to be a large shopping complex, and there was a lot of opposition from some of the residents in the city that it was going to overcrowd US 27. There was a lot of complaints from families of fire victims that felt like something needed to be done to memorialize the site. So nothing's ever been developed up there. You know, it's still land that's available for use. There just hasn't been anything that's been able to go in there yet.
Did you know from your community, from Southgate, or are there friends or family members of friends who were there that night and didn't make it out?
I didn't know anyone that either was injured or killed in the fire, or anyone whose relative was injured or killed in the fire. But most of the people that were there weren't from Southgate. They were, you know, people came from all over the greater Cincinnati and even further out than that to come to the Beverly Hills.
I know that there was some sort of doctors or surgeons group. There was a Baptist choral group that was on the second floor. I grew up in Middletown, and there near there was Jacksonburg or 7 Mile, and the Edgewood School District had a retirement party that they came down there to for the—
Yeah, there were several groups. There was a group from Ashland, Kentucky, and I think they lost quite a few members of their group in the fire.
What else should people know about either that night or how firefighting has changed since then, or anything that I didn't ask that you'd like to say?
Firefighting has changed dramatically since then. Like I said, prior to that fire, our concern and the concern of most fire departments, I think, was, you know, how do we put this building out if it's on fire? You didn't really think that much about how do we rescue large numbers of patrons who are trapped. And I think that changed nationwide after the Beverly Hills fire. Unfortunately, I think that as time has gone by, that has been slowly but, you know, unfortunately ignored or allowed to slip. And because of that, we've had different fires over the past years. I think the there was a fire in Rhode Island at Station, I can't remember the exact name, but there was a fire in Rhode Island in a nightclub where it caught fire and 100 people died. And there was another fire where about 60 people died. And in both of those cases, it was a situation where it was overcrowded. There was the fire just recently in Oakland, California, in the abandoned building where they, you know, they didn't have sprinklers, didn't have exits.
Where people were actually living, and there was concerts and other stuff, and the steps were made out of
pallets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, we have those kind of incidents crop up, and whenever they do, one of the things that happens is people will go back and refer back to the Beverly Hills fire, and you would hope that you're not going to have any more incidents like that, but they do continue to occur. And it's mainly because people either just ignore the law or feel like they just want to be part of something so bad that they ignore the fact that they're in an overcrowded, dangerous situation, you know, and they just assume that nothing's going to happen bad to them. And unfortunately, you know, on occasion it does.
I'm guessing here, but you were there all night that night?
We were there for most of 4 or 5 days. I think Wednesday was when we finally got out. Personally, I was there all that night. I went home. I had gone to the fire without socks, and so my feet were pretty raw by morning. I went home, got a pair of socks, went back up to the fire. I actually went to my business and opened my business up, and then left and went back to the fire. I was up there the next morning when we removed the bodies that we weren't able to get out the night before. I took part in that, and then, you know, late that evening, I think I was able to go home, and we started working in shifts. But someone from the fire department was there until Wednesday. And I think it was Wednesday or either Tuesday or Wednesday when we recovered the last two missing bodies.
I was had been on the inquiry staff since 75, so 2 years. But I was there Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I'm guessing. And after the bodies were found, then there was a steelworker, and I want to think his name was James Lanigan. There was somebody who came.
Yeah. James Lanigan, I think.
Came in and kind of supervised the gentle destruction kind of piece by piece.
Yes. He had actually been at the Mexico City earthquakes, which had happened, I guess, a couple years before then. He flew into town when he heard about the fire and offered his services, and he kind of supervised the slow removal of the steel and stuff to find the people who were still trapped.
Yeah, it was almost like a deconstruction. As carefully as you put those beams and pieces together, he was making sure that the pieces were coming off very carefully in case to find, I think there was a person or two that
there
was
were two,
up.
Two women who had been on the second floor, and they were not found until I think Tuesday.